From the nautical mile of your heart, it's Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport, one of the oldest stations in the country. And it looks it.
There goes the Daverhood!
The guy David Lefkowitz is here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! I shoot flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, twirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Good evening and welcome, everybody, here on these final dwindling minutes and moments of May. It's May 31st, 2009. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, and I'm here with the 312th episode, brand new episode of Dave's Gone By. This program has been on WGBB since October of 2002, and while not every single week that I get here there's something new or unusual, over the years there have been all sorts of different things. We had the rather hurricane-like dismissal of a program director years ago, and are packing up and moving, and some days one piece of equipment wouldn't work, and there have been, when I've been engineering here and not necessarily doing my own show, there have been all sorts of altercations and funny things that happen. So you never quite know when you've been at a radio station or any place of business for week after week, year after year. You never quite know the day that you walk in if something else is going to be going on. And lo and behold, everything's fine. You know, I'm here in lovely Babylon on this beautiful, kind of blowy and windy night. We're getting March wind in the middle of June. Someone please explain that to me. But all is well. The board seems to be working. The tape players and all that, the mini discs are working okay. But in order to have my microphone working, I actually have a tape dispenser on the board. The engineer who was here before I get here, Adam Kern, who actually does a rather cool show at, I believe, 6 o'clock at night on Sundays, where he just interviews people and talks and does his own stuff. Cool guy. He warned me. He said, Dave, you know, there are really only two ways to keep the microphone on. Either you can hold your finger on the button for the next hour, or you can try and put something onto the board to hold the button down. And I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to turn the thing off for, like, commercials and stuff when I don't want my mic on. That'll be an interesting thing to figure out. But right now, I'm staring at a tape dispenser, and it's holding my mic down, and I'm hoping it won't slide off the board. And that's as the phrase goes, it's always something, I guess. Anyway, the something that we're doing tonight on Dave's Gone By is kind of cool. We've got a couple of things. First of all, we're going to be talking to someone that we don't often do on this program. This program is usually dedicated either to the arts, and we talk to singers and directors and actors and playwrights. Sometimes we go a little further afield. We go for folks like a whistling guy, a guy who whistles competitively, or an opera fanatic. Well, that actually falls into the arts. Or sometimes we try for something a little different. Well, this fella has gone far afield in a bunch of different directions. Kind of interestingly, he's a money man, not some Wall Street money maker, not somebody who's cheated the rest of the world out of their money so he could line his coffers in Switzerland. This is a fellow who has worked as a financial officer for film and television. As a matter of fact, dig this. This is kind of cool. His name is Robert Stern, by the way, and he was the financial officer, the chief financial officer for Fox Television during the last years of MASH. He also was he was doing television and checking the books and doing the records during the Wonder Years, and he apparently, and we're going to ask him about this, had financial consideration, or shall we say, he was logging the checks and signing the checks for George Lucas's little film called Star Wars. So that's kind of neat. That's enough to be interesting in right off the bat, even though money... You say the word money and my eyes just roll and my eyelids fall down because I don't make any and I don't care about people who do. But the people who sort of balance the books for famous people and big famous corporations like that, well, that is kind of interesting. And also because this guy is now taking this whole other tack and writing books about relationships and men and women and all that kind of stuff. And I think he's a songwriter too. So we're going to probe the variegated mind of Robert Stern in just a couple of moments. And also, on this episode of Dave's Gone By, we'll go inside Broadway for some Broadway news a few days before the Tony Awards. That's coming up next week, as is the WGBB Tony Awards special, 5 to 7 p.m. next Sunday, hosted by yours truly. So we will get to some Broadway news, as well as a review of the off-Broadway drama Groundswell. That'll be a little later in the program. But first, I want to tell you a couple of things to please visit the sponsors of Dave's Gone By, because they make this show happen. They include Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Been around since the 1970s, and they're family-owned. 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island. 569-5577 for every copy job, big and small. 569-5577, area code 516. And remember, Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off every job at Hewlett Minuteman Press. This program is also brought to you by the Woodrow Delicatessen. Oh my God, is that stuff yummy. I mean, it's kosher, it's open 7 days. Even if the food weren't kosher, it would be unbelievably delicious. All the cold cuts you could possibly think of, hot and cold, about 8 different kinds of chicken dishes, plus all the amazing little vorspeise kinds of things, like hot dogs and knishes and kashavarnishkas, and you know, get a free bowl of pickles that are amazing. Woodrow Delicatessen, located on Peninsula Boulevard in the Peninsula Shopping Center. Go to WoodrowDeli.com, and remember, it's Woodrow Deli. You leave off that second W for wow, what wonderful food. This program is also brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Journal, which has been around since 1944, telling everybody everything they need to know about what's going on off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance. Performing Arts Insider, it's the Bible of Broadway. Go to performingartsinsider.com and go to davesgoneby.org to find out how you can get an amazing discount on annual subscriptions to Performing Arts Insider. And finally, this program is brought to you by Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party decorating needs. I'm not going to give you too much information because that is founded, and the owner of that business is Jeff Goodman, who's usually my guest co-host, but he's having the time of his life in Thailand. He goes there 2 or 3 times a year, so best of wishes to Jeff, but when he comes back, get him for your parties. So, anyway, we're going to start the party of Dave's Gone By soon as I do a couple of commercials, and we'll be right back with Robert Stern, I think our first CFO. Ooh, right after these messages. Don't go away. Meow! I'm not an ordinary cat. I'm a copycat. I love to make copies. So my favorite place is Hewlett Minuteman Press. For 3 decades, they've been on Broadway in Hewlett, printing booklets, making business cards, designing wedding invitations, and making millions of copies. Meow! How good is Minuteman? Hey, I used to have one life. Now I've got 9. Hewlett Minuteman, on Broadway opposite Lohman's. Tell him Toner the Copycat sent you for 10% off. Here are 15 reasons why you should visit the Woodrow Delicatessen in Hewlett. Brisket, hog open roast beef, barbecue chicken, chicken fricassee, Polynesian chicken, frankfurters, stuffed cabbage, Romanian tenderloin, fresh turkey off the bone, matzo ball soup, French fries, corned beef, pastrami, 7-layer cake, and Hawaiian chicken salad. And here are 3 more reasons. The Woodrow is kosher, open daily in the Peninsula Shopping Center, and they cater. Woodrow Deli. How many reasons do you need?
It's a money world. It's a money world. It's a money world. It's a money world. You need quarter. You need quarter. You need dollar. You need dollar. It takes money. It takes money. To survive. It's a money world. It's a money world. Am I right? Am I right? Money pays the rent. Money is quickly spent. Money, it keeps the crackle bright. It's a money world. Yeah, am I right? Money wets the whistle. Money opens the door. Money can build a money can build a money closes the door. It's a money world. It's a money. It's a money world. Money greases the palm. Money occupies your mind. Money can buy your soul. Money is on your mind. It's a money world. I wish no one else had taken money. Do you know what I mean? It's a money world. Am I right? Am I right?
You are certainly right, Wildman Fisher. For better or worse, it is a money world. It's also a world where I'm just having to reposition the tape dispenser on the microphone button here. Ah, it seems to be working, so I can have my finger free. Don't know what I really need that finger for, but I still don't really want to hold it down for the next 20 minutes while I talk to Robert Stern, who is an author. He's also a former CFO for television and film, and has a bunch of different anecdotes and stuff to talk about. So without further ado, Robert Stern, how are you?
I'm fine, Dave, and how are you?
I'm good, I'm good. Where are you calling from?
I'm in New York City as we speak.
Oh, what are you doing in town?
I came in for Book Expo America.
Ooh, now what book are you pushing?
I'm pushing For Certain, I'm Hurtin'.
For Certain, I'm Hurtin'. And that's a relationship kind of...
It is. I learned through that, through my experiences, I learned what the number one cause of divorce was.
That's tell me it's marriage.
Marriage, you got
yeah,
it.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and that's my book, and that's the story, and that's the journey of... and I take myself through my journey through that process and discovering what men and women are really about.
How many times have you been married and divorced?
I've been married and I've been married three times, divorced twice. My second wife passed away.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay. That was part of the journey. That's over 20 some years ago.
But what did you learn from the two divorces?
Well, what I really learned was that men are about sex and attention, and that women are about being provided for and protected.
This you did not know going in.
Apparently, I didn't.
Okay.
And that the woman sets the tone of all relationships, and how she sets that tone with her power determines how the relationship will evolve.
Huh. Okay, that sounds pretty cool. And this is what you... How do you tell this in your book? How do you spin that out to 150-odd pages?
Well, I take my journey from many of my mistakes through life, and the pain that's why it's called For Certain, I'm Hurtin'. I've had a lot of, you know, things to deal with and a lot of growth. So as I went through my business career... In the entertainment business, I traveled all the way through with relationships, trying to do relationships and business at the same time, and so I tell that story.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Forgive me if I'm misremembering, especially since it could be rather embarrassing if I'm misremembering, but when we first talked a few weeks ago at the radio TV interview conference,
National Publicity Summit.
Thank you. Yes, National Publicity Summit in Manhattan. You know, there was also a thing where you were pretty much chasing sex everywhere. Am I remembering that right?
Well, that's true. that's quite true. I said to you, it's no secret that sex makes the world go round. But what is a secret is that thousands of decent American men are traveling around the world for sex and attention. That's what I got your attention with.
Yeah, that did get my attention. So do you consider that one of your mistakes?
No, actually, in that particular phase of my life, I was in transition. I was going through my third marriage had ended, and I was pretty distraught about that. And everybody who goes through a relationship breakup knows you go through a certain transition. Mm-hmm. And I was in that transition, and I had kind of figured, you know, I don't think I can do this anymore. So I decided, because I'm an older guy, I decided that maybe I should do something different. And so I began to travel around the world looking for what was next.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that makes total sense. But what was next, you know, any 22-year-old with a cute smile?
Actually, there were a lot of 23-year-olds with cute smiles.
Works for me, yeah.
In Costa Rica, in the Dominican Republic, those were primarily the places I went.
Well, wait a minute. Were you paying for these things, or were these...
Sometimes yes, sometimes
okay.
no.
Did you have a moral problem with any of that, or not? Or
no, I didn't have a moral problem with it.
Okay, cool. That's good for you, I guess.
Well, in many respects, in many other parts of the world that are... They're disadvantaged, and these are not underage girls. So I'm not doing.
Okay.
I did not do anything that was illegal in Costa Rica. It's legal in the Dominican Republic. It's legal in Costa Rica. Temping is illegal. Okay, but
temping?
Prostitution is not.
Temping is illegal.
Temping is
people
illegal
have to work
in Costa
full
Rica.
Time. Or did you say pimping?
Pimping.
Sorry, I missed the.
That's okay.
Oh, that joke didn't work at all. Okay, yeah.
I mean, and a lot of the. It's unfortunate, it's not like the United States, but it's unfortunate for a lot of the women and girls, their only source of income is to do this.
Right.
So, I mean, it's the oldest profession in the world.
No, I mean, that's totally cool. Do you still indulge? I mean, you're still divorced, or do you have a full-time girlfriend
thingy? No, I'm in another relationship now.
Oh, good for you.
And well, let me make it clear that in all of my relationships, I was exclusive. I never cheated on anybody.
Oh.
So, I'm a very honorable guy. I happen to be in another relationship now.
But I assume that when you say you made mistakes, and that was the... What were the mistakes then? That were marriage wreckers.
Well, I think it's choosing the wrong people. While I had my own flaws, choosing the wrong people was probably my mistake, and not really understanding the relationship equation about really accepting my own needs for sex and attention. And men are quite a bit about attention.
Oh yeah,
and women define their needs for providing and protecting quite differently. And so it's really understanding what it is that they really need, and are you able to give them, and will they be satisfied? For women to be satisfied, they must be able to celebrate their man. He must be their hero. And unfortunately, I don't believe I chose women who really saw me in that light. And so, but not that I couldn't be a hero to someone else. A lot of people make the mistake of choosing the wrong person. And that was probably... Well, let me put it this way. My second wife, the one who passed away, I was her hero, and the truth is, she was my hero, too. So it's not like I didn't find it. After that marriage, I thought everything would be okay, but it wasn't, because what I realized, if a woman gets it and celebrates her man, the man doesn't have to get too much. He just has to, he'll worship the ground she walks on. And my mistake was, I thought that would all... Once I found it, I thought I could just go on and find it again and find it again. And I didn't really understand that I had to find a woman who got it, who really understood the relationship equation.
Hmm. Okay. Well, do you feel, it's kind of putting you on the spot, but do you feel that girl number four got it?
Yeah. I'll tell you why she got it. When we were going out on the very first date, I started talking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I live in Las Vegas. And I had been in Southern California for over 30 years, and she was from the Southern California and area as well. And we had met in Las Vegas. And one of the classes that I took while I was in Los Angeles was a class called Understanding Women from this great expert, Alison Armstrong, who has a website, understandmen.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a class that they teach women, which is called Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women. Everything I've learned about this has really come from brilliant women experts.
Actually, isn't it just lick the alphabet? Didn't Sam Kinison do it in like 5 minutes?
No, I don't know.
Just kidding.
I know.
Now, let's move on. Let's move on to some of the stuff that I also want to talk about regarding your career.
Yes.
I guess a money man would not really be the correct term. You're not a producer. You were the guy in accounting. As it were.
That was one of my duties. That's basically correct. That was the most charge of my responsibilities. That's right.
So you were doing the books for... How did you get to do the books for Fox Television and become their chief financial officer?
Well, I started with Fox. First I started with Fox in the features division. I came in and I had to learn the film business. I was the head of what was called the participation department. And what that means, the word participation means that the writers, actors, directors, producers have an opportunity to participate in the film, which means to get additional compensation on how well the film does.
Okay.
And I learned the business on my very first film, Star Wars. Star Wars was my first film. I had the great opportunity of going to the very first screening at the studio. And
Wait. Stop there.
All right.
Stop there. We're talking to Robert Stern, who,
you're right.
As he's telling us, he was the CFO of Fox Television, and your first movie was Star Wars, and you're saying that you were at the first screening of the fully cut film with music and everything, right?
As presented to us and introduced to us by George Lucas.
What was it like that when he did you realize that he had something that would be a monster?
No, none of us realized it. In fact, all the studios passed on Star Wars time and time again until Alan Ladd Jr., who was the head of Fox Features at that time, decided to make it. And when we saw it, I liked it, but nobody had the idea nor was ready for the amount of success that this film brought to the studio. The studio, back during that era, the studios were having great difficulties, and Star Wars actually saved 20th Century Fox at that particular time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So you came out of that screening room, you saw it. What was George Lucas like when he was introducing the movie? Was he humble? Was he incredibly proud because he'd come up with it? Was he worried?
I always found George Lucas to be a very soft-spoken guy, but he presented it. He believed in his product, and he just wanted us to enjoy his film. So I found him very gracious.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So one of the things in your bio says that you wrote like a $42 million check. What was that for? In other words, you were green-lighting before the movie got made.
The $42 million check, after the film was released, it went. It's out in the theaters, and the money is coming into Fox. Fox has an obligation under the contract with George Lucas to pay him his participation, his back-end deal. And so I was new to the participation department, so for three months, my brain worked harder at that time than it has in my entire life. I had to know where every dollar came from, where it went, how it was spent, how it was used, and then my department calculated under the contract that George Lucas had with the studio what his net profits definition had. In other words, it's like doing a tax return, and you come down to the bottom line, and under the rules and the regulations, and you come down to what he's owed. And that first check was for $42 million.
Oh, my God. This is going back to an era. I mean, now, if a movie doesn't make $100 million in its run, we consider it almost a flop. Back then, I didn't think that Star Wars made that much money even in the first 3 months, even though it was huge.
Oh, it did. Star Wars cost in the teens about $16 million, $17 million, somewhere in that range to make it, and another $16 or $17 million to market. That was the initial surge. But talking about the $100 million mark, after the success of Star Wars, I also, one of my jobs was to evaluate projects.
Oh.
And a project was given to me called Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I was supposed to look at this and determine whether we should go forward or make my recommendation whether we should go forward with it or not.
Uh-huh.
So after the evaluation, I concluded that in order for Raiders of the Lost Ark to break even, we had to take in $100 million. And that was my recommendation. I said, if you think we can bring in $100 million with it, do it. I said, we don't have too many films to bring in $100 million. I wouldn't take the risk.
Wow.
So I recommended no, and the rest is history. It went on to Paramount and did, you know what happened.
It did, yeah. Oh, well, see, there you go. You get, were there any films that you green-lighted that you, you weren't really the one to green-light.
I wasn't the green-lighter,
but were there any films that you went, this is worth the risk, and it turned out to be something that was either really big or something even better, a film that you're really proud got made? Because it made a little money, but it was a great film.
Well, the films that I was associated with that had their successes, like, was Mel Brooks' History of the World Part One, Young Frankenstein.
Wait, you were there during Young Frankenstein?
Well,
that
must
have been a huge.
Well, I was there during paying out the participations because they continue. I was there when Omen. I actually went to London and was on the Omen set. Julia was made during that period of time.
With Jane Fonda and was it Robards?
No, I'm trying to remember. There's another actress that was in it.
Oh, okay.
There's another actress
In
Julia.
But that was the one about Hellman, right? Lillian Hellman?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Cool. Wow.
So I went through that was a lot of films. And then after I was in the feature film division, I moved over because prior to that I had been in radio and television stations in the Los Angeles area, and then my career moved over. After 2 years in the features, I went over to the television division.
And there you were in Fox, right? And you were dealing with a little show called MASH.
Yeah, MASH. I was in the television division as the financial guy for television during the final years of MASH. And as an aside from that, when I used to be in the features division, the stage for MASH was right across, was next to my building, and Alan Alda would always come into my building, and we would talk a little bit from time to time, and then 2 years later, I'm in television as he's doing MASH. And one day I'm in my office as the financial guy, and during when we would do pilots for the television network, they would always come in to audit our costs and stuff, so I became friends with the head of the NBC audit department. And one day I get a call from him, and he tells me that they're going to be doing on the Emmy broadcast. Each year they do what are called the reading of the rules, way back when they used to have, you know, they have Price Waterhouse.
And oh, yeah.
They were going to do a group of accountants, and they were going to have accountants come and and do a song and dance act for the Emmys. So I went down to audition for it. He encouraged me to go audition for it.
Yeah.
And so when I went down there, there were like 300 accountants.
Oh.
Financial types from the industry auditioning to do a song and dance act live on the Emmys. and we would go, and they would take us to the piano to see if we could sing, and then they would, after they listened, they'd take us up three at a time, and then they would go in the back room after they heard us, and they'd whisper and make notes and do all that. And then they sent us over to do a dance act. Now
it was like a counting idol, you know?
So we had, it's almost like that. And Michael Peters, who was a choreographer of Michael Jackson's Thriller album, was the guy who was working with us in the dance area. And so he would then go 5, 6, 7, 8, and then we had to follow his steps. And then they'd go back and whisper. Well, I ended up getting selected to be on it. There were 30 of us who got selected. And I was on stage, at, you know, in the Pasadena auditorium, and looking straight at me at the time while I was doing my live broadcast was Alan Alda. And just smiling at me.
So actually, I'll bet that didn't inhibit you. I'll bet that relaxed you a little bit, if it was possible to be relaxed at that moment.
Yes, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, that's so let me ask you something. Here, I mean, granted, people's dream jobs in Hollywood would be acting and directing. But if you're not going to do that, if your talent lies in a different way, you had these really cool jobs. You were like the head financial guy, vetting the costs, writing the checks, seeing that the checks were going in the right place for all these huge projects in movies and TV. Honest question, why aren't you still doing that? Are you comfortably retired, or is it the way of the business that people just get canned, you know, after a few years of service?
Well, it's a young person's business, and you go through, you know, Hollywood is filled with power and regimes, and so it is natural to go through those cycles. I had a wonderful career, a wonderful ride. I'm financially very sound, and so later, after I told you about my wife who passed away, I happened to be at that time at a company called New World, and I was at New World, and that's during the Wonder Years era, and After I left that company got bought out, and I got bought out. I wanted to raise my son and do something different, and I wanted to be close because his mom wasn't there, so I started my own business. But after that business stopped, and he was getting ready to go off to college, I decided to go back into the business, and I was fortunate enough to become a general manager of a talent agency, a literary talent agency in Beverly Hills.
Oh, which one?
It was Broder, Webb, Turvin, and Silverman, which was actually bought out by ICM.
Everything's bought out by everything. And when they bought out Broder, blah, 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 Silverman, were you out the door then? Or
yeah, I was out a little bit before that. It was coming, and it was my time to go, and then I went on to do some other things, and then I eventually left Los Angeles and moved to Las Vegas.
And how do you like it in Vegas?
I absolutely love Vegas. I'm a professional bingo player now.
Wait, what?
No, that's humor.
Oh, sorry. Okay. No, because my guest co-host, who's usually on this program, Jeff Goodman, he's a Vegas nut. He loves. It's not like he's a big wild gambler. He just enjoys the whole scene of it, and he's very, very seriously considering moving there in a year or two.
It's a great time to buy because everything, as you know, across the country is depressed, and it's a great time to buy.
Oh, cool. So, last question for Robert Stern, former CFO, possibly a CFO again, and also author. Kira, this is the thing that I don't get. Your job, for the most part, your various jobs, had to do with making sure that the books were the books. When you went to the IRS and you handed them what the profits were, what the losses were, what the grosses that came in were, and how they were distributed, everything kind of checked out. So how is it that Hollywood hides money? How does a $200 million film never make a profit so that they don't have to pay the actors who have percentage points of the film anything? How do they do that?
Well, it's called a, you know, there's a lot of misnomers about that, and I can tell you about Alien, because Alien had a lot of publicity related to that. You have to understand that each of the participants in the film have individual contracts that define how everything is going to be calculated. And these individuals are represented by very high-powered attorneys who understand the definitions by which these calculations are going to be done.
Okay.
So it's not that they're really hiding anything. It's a misnomer. That doesn't mean that in the early days when there was a gray area, I mean, some things were black and some things were white, so it was very clear for the interpretation. But where the contract was gray, the studio naturally, you know, interpreted it in its favor. And then sometimes the participant would disagree. And it's true that many, 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 many years ago, not during my era, but many years before that, the studios did play dirty tricks. But that was gone by the time I got into the business.
Well, I will take you for your word, because you seem like you're certainly honest about your life in a whole bunch of ways. So I'll certainly take your word for that. And give us the word on how people can purchase Certain I'm Hurtin'.
Well, for CertainI'mHurtin.com, FORCERTAIMHURTIN, for CertainI'mHurtin.com.
Well, I am. There's no apostrophe on it.
There's no apostrophe.
For certain I'm Hurtin.
There's no G on the end of Hurtin.
So, well, I'm hoping you're not hurting anymore. It doesn't sound like you are. You got a nice girlfriend. You got the place in Vegas. You're comfortably set. And your son's doing well?
Everybody's doing well.
Thank God. Good news. Good things to hear. And really good talking to you. Wonderful conversation. Great hearing about all the different aspects of your life. And I want to thank so much Robert Stern for visiting the Daverhood.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Have a great night.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, listen to me. No, I mean listen to me on Compact Disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like Mel's a Poppin' and Handyman Yoni, visits with guests like Reckless Eric and Julie Haggerty, punchlines and politics in the News Gone By, all just $11 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD. Did you know that I, Dave, am not just a fantastic radio personality, I'm also a playwright, and my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, is filled with the same humor I bring to Dave's Gone By every week. Funny, sad, true. Makes a great gift, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TotalTheater.com. Yes, we're going inside Broadway this week, just a few more days before the Tony Awards happen on June 7th. Reminder, well, I'm going to tell you right now once again that we celebrate the Tonys every year here for the past 5 years at WGBB AM 1240 by doing the annual Tony Awards special, and I've been proud and honored to be the host of that special, and I'm going to do it again this year. Now, normally we end up doing it like a few days before the Tonys or even a week before, but this year we're doing it Tony night. We're going early in the evening from 5 to 7 p.m. We've got a two-hour special on Sunday night, June 7th, and we're going to be playing Tony music, well, Broadway music, I should say, including songs from new shows like Billy Elliot and Shrek, and also classics from shows that people are seeing on Broadway right now in revival, like West Side Story, Guys and Dolls, and Hair. We'll also be talking, as we usually do, to a bunch of my colleagues and friends who are theater critics for major publications and radio stations around the country. So check it out. It's the WGBB Tony Special next Sunday night, 5 to 7 p.m. Remember, of course, that it's on WGBB, so you can stream it live at am1240wgbb.com. Also, giving you a little Broadway and theater information that directly involves yours truly, don't miss Stage Buggy Showbiz Talk. This is a show that I've been doing for a few weeks now at the Players Theater on McDougal Street, right in the Village. It's about a block from the West 4th Street subway station, a lovely little theater. Literally, all you got to do is go up West 3rd or up Minetta Lane and turn, and there it is. And it's this panel-style talk show where I interview people from the entertainment business, everything from casting directors to regular theater directors and producers, playwrights, actors, performers, cabaret people. It's a lot of fun. Generally, we try and include one performer in the show as well. So we kind of either open the show or cap the show with a musical number, which makes it nice and fun. And in between, we talk to these people, some of them famous, about what they do, and how they do it, and how they started in the business, and really inside cool information. So if you're an actor, or if you know anybody who is, or if you just have a basic interest in how the whole thing works, on how shows get made, how films get directed and produced, you really want to check out Stage Buggy Showbiz Talk, Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock, live at the Players Theater, 115 McDougal Street. It's a live show. It's also taped, for videotaped, for webcast, and you can see the older episodes at stagebuddy.com. You have to go clicking through a few things, but they actually have two of our past episodes, and they look really great, so check them out at stagebuddy.com. So, oh, and let me tell you that I know on the 31st, no, that's I got that date wrong, but the next one, this Tuesday, June 2nd, among the people we'll be talking to will be Walter Winston O'Neill, a Broadway and film actor, casting director Danny Super, and a couple of other really, really cool people as well. So check it out this coming Tuesday night, live right in Manhattan. Okay, going to the Broadway stuff of Inside Broadway, well, now that the Tonys are here, we're already into the 2009-2010 season. The previous season ended 2 weeks ago, and the Broadway League has now released the numbers on how last season was. Now, believe it or not, even though we've been in the midst of a recession that goes back to already pretty much last summer, things were going downhill. June and July was when things started to crash. Well, despite all that, somehow Broadway had another record year financially. It's all about the money today. There you go. Grosses were up 0.6%, probably on some level owing to higher prices, because Broadway ticket prices just don't go down, but also because the theaters were really full. There were a lot of plays. There were more plays this year. By plays, I mean plays and musicals. There were more product than we've had. Apparently, I actually wrote this down here. There were 43 shows opening on Broadway during the 2008-2009 season, making it the most active season since 1982 to 1983. Usually we have between 35 to 40 shows. So that's pretty amazing. There were 10 new musicals, 8 new plays, 4 musical revivals, 16 play revivals, didn't feel like there were that many, and 5 special performances, you know, stuff like the Will Ferrell piece, I think, was called A Special. But the thing is, the only real negative factor that I can see is that attendance was down 1%. So again, even though grosses were up, that can come from little bit from the higher prices and people willing to pay more once they're in town, but somewhat fewer people attended this past season. Grosses were at $943 million. Wonder if Robert Stern can wrap his mind around that. Anywho, going to Off-Broadway on Inside Broadway, a big new musical opens tomorrow at the MCC Theater, Manhattan Class Company, producing this. It's a musical by Stephen Merritt, I believe he pronounces it Stephen rather than Stephen, of the Magnetic Fields. I don't know if you're familiar with the Magnetic Fields, but they're a really, really cool band, and it's basically the outfit that backs Stephen Merritt. He has this deep, basso, wonderful voice, and for me, their breakthrough album was one called I, in which all the songs on it, there are about 14 songs, and they all begin with the word I, or at least the letter I, and almost every song on it is melodic and clever and hummable and wonderful. So it was a really one of the best albums of recent years. So people are pretty excited about Coraline, the musical that has songs by Stephen Merritt, and the book is by David Greenspan, who is a long-time off-Broadway presence and a presence in the gay theater community. Merritt is also gay. But I don't think this particular show is a gay show or a gay-themed show. It's all about a bored girl, a young girl, who finds an alternate universe with a more loving family. Kind of interesting. And I've also read a little bit about it where they're not just using regular instruments. I think they're using toy pianos occasionally and tempered pianos where they do weird things to it to make it sound kind of different. Seems pretty audacious and odd, and one would expect nothing less from Stephen Merritt. And I hope it's wonderful. I'm really not looking forward to seeing that many things over the summer, even though I'm a theater critic and I love seeing all theater. But this is one that I'm really perked and like, oh, wow, yeah, I want to check this out. So that's Coraline. It opens tomorrow, and it runs to July 5th. I believe it's been extended already. It was supposed to run to the end of June, and there was so much interest that they've already added a week or two to the run. And if the reviews are good, who knows, maybe it'll run the summer or even transfer. So check out Coraline, and check out this ad for Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway. Broadway theater has never been grander or more expensive. So, like any big purchase, you gotta do homework. You wanna pick the best show or the most family appropriate, the best reviewed or with the biggest stars or most interesting design. Everyone has different criteria. Performing Arts Insider answers them all. For decades, the Bible of Broadway that professionals check for every show on every New York stage. Visit PerformingArtsInsider.com and see DavesGoneBy.org for a 30% subscriber discount. Now go, do your homework. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on these last 2 minutes of May 31st, last 2 minutes of May. We're doing Dave's Gone By Inside Broadway here. By the way, you're listening to WGBB Freeport. Get a little bit of legal business out of the way and move back to the business of theater to an off-Broadway show that I saw this week called Groundswell. It's playing at the Acorn Theater all the way on 9th Avenue and 42nd Street in Theater Row, in that wonderful complex that they've got. Really comfortable place to see a bunch of shows. They've got five or six different theaters right on 42nd West, right between 8th and 9th. And if you've never seen anything there, do check it out. It's really neat. And so this particular play comes from South Africa, and they've called it over there the best play of the year from South Africa. Okay, I don't know what their roster was last year. And the play definitely does have merit. The author is a fellow named Ian Bruce, and his story is basically about these two South Africans who are in an inn. They're not quite running the inn. One of them is a caretaker who's looking after the place while the owner is away. So he's normally just the gardener and stuff, but this time he's also the host and making sure everything's okay and catering to the guest who's apparently coming in. And then his colleague and friend is this rather strange and scary ex-cop who's also a diver and looking, you know, basically trying to make his way in the world now that he can't be a policeman anymore for reasons that we find out during the play. And so, what they... I'm confusing things with diamonds and diving and mines, but yeah, it's more about mining stuff. But anywho, you know, it's funny, you see a play 3 days earlier, and you already start to confuse details, but what they want to do, and especially what the former policeman, Johan, wants to do, is convince the guest, whom they assume has money, because he's a world traveler, and he's coming from London, and he's like, they're, you know, excited about him, because they figure, aha, if we get a grubstake from him, if he'll invest in our little scheme, and they mean it not as a scheme in a low sort of way. I mean, they really think that they can go and do this thing where they can get diamonds and make money. But if they feel that they can convince him to invest in what they're doing, then the black South African who is the caretaker, he'll be able to care for his family, Johan will have enough money to retire, and everybody will be happy. So their idea is to convince this man to invest. But, well, unfortunately, he's just not all that interested. And this is a terrible, crushing disappointment to them, but what it really leads to is a bunch of revelations in the last 20 minutes or so as to the real desperate state that they're all in, that's kind of been under the surface the whole time, as to why the cop is no longer the cop, and what happened during not just the apartheid years, but after apartheid, to all the characters. It isn't, but then a couple of things that I really liked about the play, even though there are definitely reasons why it's kind of annoying and not quite worth your time. But what is worthy about Groundswell, first of all, is that it takes a different angle to something that we think we all know about. If you say the word apartheid in South Africa, well, you have this basic image, okay, blacks being oppressed, beaten, taken away from their families, you know, being imprisoned for not having their passports, and basically horrible, horrible racial oppression. We think we know the whole story by knowing that. And we know a lot of the story by knowing that, but there's more to it. And so what we find out about the black caretaker, Tommy is the character's name, is what really happened with his family, and also what his hopes are post-apartheid. It's not as if suddenly everything's fine now that the whites are out of power, as it were, or at least forced to share the power. And we find out what happened with the cop. And the beautiful thing about it is, okay, he's certainly the villain of the piece in a lot of ways, and he turns into a villain in a lot of ways. But we find out the tact that this play takes in a very interesting monologue that he has is what it's really like to be hated and do your job amidst all these people who want you dead. I mean, think about that. He's doing a terrible job, and he's supporting an evil regime during the apartheid years. So he's got to go into all these black neighborhoods and arrest people and go into their shanty towns and their shacks and shine flashlights in their face and wake them up and do these things and these awful oppressive things that white power structure and cops were doing. But at the same time, to see it from his point of view, this was eating him alive, because who wants to do a job where every place you walk into, not only is it dangerous, like any cop's job is dangerous, but there are people that you're trying to deal with, to perhaps serve and protect, or at least control, would sooner stab you to death in a heartbeat than do anything that you're telling them to do. So it's a real interesting twist on that. And then you also get the twist of the guest who comes in, the traveler, and what his life has been. Here's a man who built up a career, built up a business, granted, on the backs of oppression, because he made his money in the market, some of it, and some of that came from South African diamonds, and that's built on the blacks of, on the backs of, little Freudian slip there, of black slave labor, as it were. And yet, once apartheid went away, all that was necessarily taken away from him, and on some level deservedly, but on another level, well, here's this man who worked all his life for a little stake and a career and something to give his family, and it's just pulled out from under him like that. Is he really so evil that everything can just be pulled from under him? So it's, all that stuff is real interesting, and the monologues towards the end of the play are. But there are other aspects of Groundswell where you kind of wish they would get to it a lot sooner. Like the first half hour, where first you've got Johann trying to convince the caretaker, oh, let's try and get the money from this man and treat him well and blah, blah, blah. They could get through all that in about 10 minutes, but they drag it on for about a half an hour. And it takes a play, a one-act, well, not a short one-act play, but there's no intermission. So the piece runs about an hour and 40 minutes and would be so much better if it ran about 80. Because it just is really kind of dull for a good, good stretch of the play, and only woken up, as it were, by Johann, or the actor playing him, yelling a lot. He's a bit of a screamer, and there are whole sections where he's just shouting a little too loud for the theater and the room that they're all in. So, you know, that's kind of irritating. And unfortunately, the actor Suleiman Sai Sevan, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, the guy playing Thami, the caretaker, he is good, but it's kind of hard to understand him sometimes, because he's obviously, they got someone, you know, real typecasting, as it were, for the part, but if you can't understand some of the things he's saying, that gets in the way, too. I will say this, Larry Brigman, whom you might know from the TV show Scrubs, he plays the older doctor who takes a rather sadistic glee in torturing pretty much everybody. He's a marvelous actor, and he's done a lot of Broadway and off-Broadway, and he's really excellent here. I mean, he really shows all sides of this businessman who's just out to go around, travel a bit, and live fairly comfortably the rest of his life, but also he's got these deep things going on as well. And the way he starts to manifest fear when the situation in that little inn gets really tense and potentially extremely scary and violent is really something to watch. So it's worth seeing it for Larry Brigman, worth, you know, I guess staying for the monologues at the end, but I still kind of wonder if it wouldn't be better to just sit down and read the play to get what we get from it rather than to sit through Groundswell. But that's your choice to make. It's playing for another couple of weeks at the Acorn Theater off Broadway. Well, that's Inside Broadway for this edition of Dave's Gone By. Going to do a couple of commercials. It's 12:08, and I'm not sure if or when the gospel folks are coming in. They usually go from about midnight or so until 6 a.m. We'll let you know when they get here. But until then, I'm going to be here, so stick around. There's more Dave's Gone By to come. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Dave's Gone By wants you to advertise on the show. Reach our loyal audience with your message at prices you can afford even in this economy. Call 516-295-1511, 295-1511, or visit davesgoneby.org for info. You'll want us just as much as we want you. Shalom, dammit. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I personally invite you to watch my TV show, Shalom Dammit, Rabbi Saul Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour on Cablevision twice a week. If you've never seen a Jew before, this is your chance!
Hi, this is Jeff Goodman, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Dave's Gone By.
Yeah, there goes the neighborhood. It goes so quickly, doesn't it, ladies and gentlemen? I did get a call during the break from the gospel folks. They'll be here in just a couple of minutes. So if you're waiting for gospel all night until the morning, they should go on at about 12:15-ish. So just a couple of more minutes of me, which gives me time to do my outro stuff and remind you that if you like this show or you don't like the show or you like or dislike certain aspects of it, the way to get in touch is to email me. DaveIsGoneBy@AOL.com. That's Dave, like my name, D-A-V-E-S, GoneBy@AOL.com. And the way to find out more and more about this program is going to the website, DaveIsGoneBy.org. And let me tell you, we've been putting even more older shows up on the site. We have of the 312 shows that we have done of this program going back to 2002, we have about 280 now up on the web. You can listen to them anytime at all, absolutely free. You can skim through them over, like, well, I don't think there are any boring bits, but if you find a bit boring, you can skim backwards or forwards over it. Go to davesgoneby.org and go to the archive section, and literally, just one after the other, you can hear shows with some of the famous people we've had on. Everyone from Neil Sedaka to Christine Lavin to Peter Tork to Julie Haggerty to Neil Innes. He was just in town at B.B. King's Blues Club, or he's going to be there soon. So, wonderful, wonderful people, and I think some pretty great shows all down the line. Check them all out at davesgoneby.org. Also, please check the sponsors of this program. Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Remember that Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off every single job at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Just have to tell them that Dave sent you. And they're at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, right next to what was the Lohman Shoe Store and is now going to be the new home of Max and Gino's. So it's right there in that little shopping area district. And they're open in the summer. They're only open Monday through Friday. During the winter, they have Saturdays too. But check them out. 10% off at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Also, show is brought to you by the Woodrow Delicatessen in the Peninsula Shopping Center of Hewlett, Long Island. Pastrami, brisket, roast beef, corned beef, tongue, so many different types of chicken, from barbecue chicken to roast chicken, Polynesian chicken, Hawaiian chicken salad, which is this concatenation of chicken and mayonnaise and pineapple and celery and walnuts. It's unbelievably delicious, I am telling you. You got to check it out. Also, they do Romanian tenderloin that's delicious. There's a pasta dish, in case, you know, you've got a non-meat eater in your group. And I keep forgetting to tell everybody that they do a lot of catering as well. So check out the Woodrow Delicatessen in the Peninsula Shopping Center. And please tell them Dave sent you. Tell George at the front so he knows that my listeners go. And tell the waiters, too, because they want to know. And they're great waiters and waitresses. I know them all. And my family's been going there for 3 decades and hopefully many decades more. The Woodrow. This program is also brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Journal, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. Dave's Gone By listeners get a really wonderful discount on the journal because it's a very expensive magazine. People in the industry pay a lot to know what's happening on Broadway, how to contact the stars and the directors and the designers, when things are opening and closing. Performing Arts Insider tells them, and they pay a lot for that information. Well, you can pay a lot less. Go to davesgoneby.org to find out more, and go to performingartsinsider.com to learn about this great, fine, trying to think of new adjectives for it, but amazingly useful and practical guide. Oh, that works. That's good. And what also works is fancy schmancy balloons. Balloons and centerpieces to make your party special. Remember, I know they call it fancy schmancy balloons, but it's not just balloon animals or a couple of balloons here and there. It's archways. It's huge, beautiful things, and also the centerpieces for your table. Jeff Goodman is the founder and proprietor of Fancy Schmancy Balloons. He's out of town for 2 more weeks. But leave him a message, 516-797-3229, 516-797-3229, because once he gets back, he will be there to do your parties. He's going to be out there and, you know, make your July 4th look really, really grand. Or if you have, well, the graduations will be over, but there'll still be christenings and bar mitzvahs and all sorts of weddings. Check it out, Fancy Schmancy Balloon, 797-3229. Just a couple of last quick reminders. Remember that Stage Buggy Showbiz Talk Tuesday nights at 7 at the Players Theater on McDougal Street in the Village is hosted by me and is really worth, I think, your while. And it's only $5 to get in. How's that? $5 to go to Stage Buggy Showbiz Talk right in the Village. And be sure to watch Rabbi Saul Solomon's show, Shalom, damn it, every Friday at 3 and 3:30 on Long Island Cablevision, channel 115, Thorne. Check them out anytime on YouTube.com. They've got the 10 episodes. They're kind of chopped up because it is YouTube, but you can see all the episodes. And the big reminder, once again, the WGBB Tony Award special, Sunday night, June 7th, next Sunday, from 5 to 7 p.m. Want to say a shout-out to Jeff Goodman, who is funny and sunny in Thailand, and to Dave J., who will be appearing at the B.B. King Blues Club. Ah, this is where Neil Innes came in. Neil Innes is going to be there Tuesday night. Dave J. is opening for him, doing his Beatles stuff. So that's kind of neat, and a big shout-out to him. Dave J. is, by the way, the fellow who wrote and sings our outro theme. Dave's gone by, there goes the Daverhood. That's him. Anyway, we've got a boogie out of here, so just last thank yous to Robert Stern for being such a really terrific interview. Please go buy his book, For Certain I'm Hurtin'. Thanks to our good friends Nihal and G. Thanks to my adorable, wonderful, sweet, and great wife, Joyce. Thanks to my mom and dad, who are great in their own way, as is Mama Weil. And thank you to the gospel folks, Michelle and James and Cam, for keeping the music going when I leave here until 6 o'clock this morning. And let's see, it's time to leave the neighborhood. Sob, sob. But we'll be back next week, June 7th, at that special time, 5 o'clock, for the 313th episode of Dave's Gone By, the WGBB Tony Award special. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night, plenty of money in the bank, and even more money out of the bank, where it's safer these days. And gone by.